T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hour number 3 of NFL Sunday. Keith Fourier and Wiggy broadcasting from our Best Yet studio in Boston. We already did the best offensive player of the first 9 games of the season. It was unanimous. Julian Edelman, worst offensive player through 9 games.
I think this is going to be unanimous.
Wiggy, who do you got?
Newhouse.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, easily.
Ooh.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but I almost feel like, are we actually being too hard on him? Because is this good for him? Or, you know what I mean? Is what he's doing, like, well, a career best?
So,
based on his skill set?
Yes.
You know?
I would not go with Newhouse.
Who would you go?
Sony Michel. I would go with Sony Michel. And the reason why I don't go with Newhouse is this was not supposed to be his role at all. In fact, he wasn't even on the team when they first, you know, got here, and very early on, they had to go to him. I treat Newhouse similar.
But now you're changing the parameters of the game.
A little bit.
Okay.
It's an exercise.
Oh, the exercise.
A little bit. I look at Newhouse like I looked at the Red Sox bullpen. The Red Sox bullpen sucked. But you know what? They're not very good anyway. So what did you really want out of them? You were asking them to be better than they really were. Whereas Sony Michel, last year in the playoffs, was really good. Hmm. He put together some really good games a year ago. What is he, 3.3 yards a carry this year? And
so
now
then,
everybody's making excuses
for him?
Then
based off of that, we can't give Jacoby Myers any credit.
Why not?
Well, because, you know, nobody expected him to do anything.
And he's actually doing something, so you could give him credit.
Well, it doesn't matter. How come we can give somebody credit for doing something, but we can't knock them for not doing something because we go, we didn't expect that person to do anything.
But Jacoby Myers, I don't think we really knew whether he was great, good, bad, horrible. We didn't really know.
In fact,
there was some buzz about him in the spring. But Marshall Newhouse,
but my,
like, nobody
my,
thought
but,
he was
but,
any
but
good.
My point is if you get an opportunity, we now we rate you based on what you do with that opportunity. So if Newhouse was out there and he was balling, wouldn't we give him credit?
Yeah, you would.
But because now he's not balling, we can't go, well, we didn't expect him to
but
do
so
anything.
Who's playing more to their level, you think? Newhouse
well, that's
or
different,
Michelle?
Though. That's
that
different.
Was my point. Yeah, I think Newhouse is.
Yeah, right. That's kind of what he is. Sony Michel, maybe unfortunately this is what he is, but he at least showed us something last year where you're like, no, he's
well, we don't know that's
solid.
What we don't know that's what he is. There have been plenty of undrafted guys. Look, Julian Edelman is a 7th-round draft pick guy. Guy's one of the all-time best.
You think Newhouse can be better?
I don't think he can be better now. I think
something in the tank?
No, I don't think he can be better now. I think he got an opportunity, and he completely fell on his face.
Newhouse?
On his face.
Yes.
On the
yeah,
face.
But he's...
On the face.
But like his whole career, like he was available for a reason. Like he's just...
No,
he's not very good. He should be a backup. Oh, you need him for a couple of plays in a pinch. He should be Cam Fleming. And he's actually probably not even as good as Cam Fleming.
No,
but that's
no
what
I'm
he
not. I'm
be.
Not. But I'm not. Maybe I'm not disagreeing with you on that point. I'm saying he got an opportunity to be more than Cam Fleming.
Yeah. So I guess I just read into it a little differently than you do. So
yeah,
Marshall Newhouse is worse at football than Sony Michel is. However, Sony Michel to me has been worse just because of the status, the level
he was drafted at.
So what was your answer, Fourier, to that question?
Mine was Newhouse,
okay.
But I said it, but then I kind of went down that road we just kind of talked about as far as is it fair to really include him because maybe this is a career, this is him playing at his peak.
Yeah. Right.
So we're kind of being, you know, critical of him for doing the best he can. I don't know. But he's still my choice.
It's like, who was worse, Matt Barnes or Chris Sale? Or Matt Barnes or David Price? Like, who was worse? Like, yeah, Matt Barnes probably worse. Or, like, pick another guy in the bullpen. It's probably worse. But what you were hoping, what you were getting out of
those guys.
Well,
you're basing it on the ceiling. One ceiling is a lot higher, and the other guy's ceiling, you're like, well.
I mean, if the question was, like, who has failed to live up to expectations, that's an easy one. But I think if you're just saying best and worst, like,
right,
I don't
see,
know.
That's what I'm saying. We didn't preface this exercise with living up to expectations.
True.
All right. Correction made.
Fair enough. All right. Defense. Who has been the best player? And I think there's probably 3 or 4 guys you could go with here.
I think there's 2 runaways.
Who do you got best defensive player?
The two runaways I had were Gilmore and Collins, and then I was trying to figure out of them two who I'd have to lean on. Man, and it's been very difficult. I don't think you can go wrong either way. I'm going to go Collins.
See, this one, okay, so Gilmore is the obvious answer, I think, just because he's the best corner in football. But right. I don't know if he gets challenged as much and as often as some of the other guys, like a Kyle Van Noy, like a Collins. I don't know if he has, you know, is burdened with more constant responsibility of making sure plays don't go sideways, I think, is that's the way I put it. So I'm kind of like grading on a curve, I guess, because I would lean towards Van Noy and Collins and even Hightower. I mean, I just – this is one where I just want to say all of the above.
Yeah, I mean, it's been loaded. They've been so good. I mean, even Devin McCourty with all of his interceptions, like they've been really good.
Right.
I'm going with Jamie Collins.
Right.
I mean, he leads the team in tackles, leads the team in sacks. He has three interceptions. He has a touchdown. He has two forced fumbles and a fumble recovery.
That's why I went with Collins.
Good Lord. And also, this defense this year is better than the defense was last year. And one of the main players that's different, one of the main, it's him.
Right.
So I'm going to give it to him.
I'm
but you're right. All those guys have played so well.
They're all playing well. Yeah. They're all playing extremely well. But at the end of the day, when you look at where he falls in as far as categories statistically, he's at the top, and you got to go, you know what, this defense is, you know, they're amazing, but he's taking his play to another level.
I mean, six sacks and three picks for a guy that also leads the team in tackles and can turn around and score. I mean, he's just been everywhere, so he has been fantastic. Special teams? Do you want to have a special teamer in there? Best worst?
Oh my God. What about
worst defensive player?
Oh God. All right, yeah, okay. Worst defensive player. This is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Who has been the worst defensive player? And let me do a caveat too. It has to be a guy who's still on the roster.
Okay,
so you can't go with Michael Bennett. That's basically what I'm going.
I'm
going
to pull a Christian Fourier on this one.
Who has been the worst?
I'm going to say
above?
No. I'm going to say
the above. You
I'm
going to
say the run defense.
Who's been the worst? I mean, I don't think there really is a
right. But if I had to give it to somebody, I'd say it'd be the run defense.
Okay. It's sort of a that is
so
a cop out
really
and a half.
Yeah,
well, you know,
are you
at all.
Saying I cop out in all these games?
No, you copped out on the
cop out.
You copped out on the best player.
I gave you best player. Oh, okay. So best player, I'll go Van Noy.
Okay,
I'll go
Van Noy. We both
whatever.
Go Collins.
I'm happy with you know what. Line them all up. I'll have sex with any of them. I'm good.
So, I mean, it's like, not exactly what we were asking, but
I mean, well, you changed the exercise.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of women out there, so you know they listen to. So you change the exercise.
Worst defensive player. All right, it's how about Brooks?
Terrence Fine. Brooks.
I'll go with Brooks.
How about Shalique Calhoun? Just because he jumped off sides last game.
Yeah, and that's why I picked Brooks because Brooks gave that big catch to Andrews. You know,
I would go with
Chris
Brooks.
Chris Collinsworth
too.
Is like talking about him, and you know, hey, here comes Brooks, and sure enough, bam, because big catch by Mark Andrews.
I mean, not a whole lot of
Calhoun's jumping off sides. He wasn't off sides on the field goal. That wasn't offsides.
You don't think so?
No, that was the worst offsides penalty I've ever seen.
They got him. They got him for it.
They did get him. They took the bait.
I feel like one of the guys that Andy Hart had he wrote an article about guys that need to be better in the second half, and one of them was Juwan Bentley. And at first I was like, really? But then you haven't really noticed him. Like, we just talked about how Van Noy, Hightower, and Collins are all playing out of their minds. So then guys like Landon Roberts and Bentley, like, you don't really remember too many plays.
Well, they're getting 10 plays a game.
That could be part of it.
Yeah,
that's a huge part of it. No, Bentley's playing like 30% of the snaps, I think. 34% of the snaps.
And that's,
you never notice them.
And that's like 12 plays in the game.
All right, so there you go. There's a good exercise. Edelman's the best, either Michelle or Newhouse, depending on how you read the question, has been the worst. And then Collins, Van Noy, Wiggy goes with like all the boogeymen, whoever you want to put in there.
Well,
is
I jumped on the Brooks bandwagon because
worst is Brooks. Yeah, worst is Brooks. And even then, so now you're going to like your fourth safety has been your worst defensive player. That's pretty good. That's when things are going pretty well.
Yeah.
All right, we will check in with Tom E. Curran here coming up from NBC Sports Boston. This is NFL Sunday brought to you by Kaplansky Insurance.
Back to NFL Sunday with Christian Fourier, Jermaine Wiggins, and Rich Keefe on Sports Radio WEEI.
Back here on NFL Sunday, it's a bi-week edition of NFL Sunday. Keith Fourier and Wiggy, we're joined now by Tom E. Curran from NBC Sports Boston. Tom, how are you, sir? Tough start already, John. Why don't we call Tom back? We'll figure this thing out. But Tom has been busy over at NBCSportsBoston.com. We'll get to some of his some of the things he was talking about, including he had an article, just bi-week observations, mm-hmm. and a bunch of things to talk about. And one of them was that the bye week is certainly no guarantee for the Patriots.
No, they've struggled coming off their bye weeks before. I thought I remember seeing that.
It's not as impressive, right? Like the win total is not nearly as impressive coming off the bye week that you would expect. But I'm also talking about the playoff, the number one seed in the playoffs too, is also not a guarantee because they now have one loss. They don't have the tiebreaker with Baltimore, who only has two losses. So you're kind of lining those things up and see what they're going. But I think we got a better connection now. Tom Curran, how are you, sir?
Richard, I just had to jump over to the phone and jump off the Opal app. I am out and about, being the bye week. Tried to take a little trip up to the Lakes region.
Oh, beautiful country.
And next thing you know, you can't have the same wireless that you had at home.
It is
so different. We're on the phone.
No problem, Tom. Let me start by, because you and I have been on the same side of the Gronk is not returning camp, and there have been others like Wiggy. He was trying to leave the door open a little bit for him.
Trying.
Well, when you see a report today, Ian Rappaport saying that, Robert Kraft talked to him, right after and was saying, hey, we'd love to have you back November, December, and in the playoff run. Does that change your opinion at all, Tom?
Not at all.
Yeah.
He said, I believe it was to Greg Hill. I might be mistaken now, but I believe it was to Greg Hill, with no reservations, no qualms, no qualifiers, I'm done. I'm not playing this year.
Correct.
Really saying I'm done. So what else do we need? I mean, to me, this is the classic habitual situation we've gotten into on Sundays where there is, and this happened a couple weeks ago with the Brady thing with Adam Schefter and ESPN, there's a void to fill. It's a day of the week or it's a quote-unquote tentpole event, and you have to generate news around it. And Sunday morning becomes a day you generate news around someone. So whether it's consequential or not, we then report that, and it becomes something that we chase for the day. Nothing's changed as far as I can tell. To me, I think that Robert Kraft is doing a tremendous disservice to Gronkowski on this. I mean, the guy has clearly made obvious that he was mentally affected by what was going on with his body. The duress he was under to try and play, the lack of enjoyment he was having, and for Robert Kraft to continue to just stir the pot on it for whatever reason, to win a day, to get a headline, to deflect from whatever conversation people want to have otherwise regarding Robert Kraft, I think it's crappy. Seriously, I really think it's crappy.
Now, one guy that we know that does want to play is Antonio Brown. I mean, Adam Schefter dropped a bomb today that we probably has been dropped many times over. He likes to come in and drop bombs after we've all dropped them about the Antonio Brown more than likely going to the commissioner's exempt list and that he's probably not going to play this season. Do you still think that he's done for the year, or is there a chance that he plays? What are your thoughts on this whole Antonio Brown situation? Because we know that he's going to meet with the NFL on Thursday.
I wondered when he had his latest eruption, if that was related to the fact that, look, I know once I sit down with these guys, they're gonna be able to uncover plenty of stuff that's going to make it untenable for me to be even signed by a team. So I'm just going to spin it so it looks like they're hosing Antonio Brown because he's Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
So I wondered if that was I'm not going to sit down with him because I won't get a fair shake. When he knows if he does sit down with him, he's not going to be able to answer anything. I mean, look how he did when he went to answer some condo allegations in Florida. He couldn't make it through the thing without practically having to be cited for borderline assault and indecent conversation, whatever the hell he was.
Yeah.
So I think that, I don't think he's going to stand up well when he sits there. He knows that. So his best way to short circuit the notion that he's going to look like crap is to short circuit the idea of the meeting in general. I don't think he's going to play in the NFL this year.
Okay.
Yeah, probably not. Although Rosenhaus said he will, but hey, that's his job to say it. So that's what he's doing there. Tom, everybody is just taking a guess at this point, but do you think N'Keal Harry will have much of an impact on the team the rest of the way?
I do.
Okay.
I do think he'll have an impact. I think that, much was made about the Baltimore absence. And I understand why it would. He was eligible to come back for that game. But when you really look at it, instead of leaping to the idea that and concluding that Tom Brady's comments mean that he is useless and a bust, I would say look at the game plan. They were going to go up-tempo, hand signals, on the road. He wasn't set up in a position to succeed anyway. I mean, Kobe Myers couldn't find his way onto the field. They went with experienced players who could operate at a high tempo on the road, and there wasn't a role for N'Keal Harry. I do think over the final seven games there will be a role for N'Keal Harry, and that will be the role that Josh Gordon filled on the outside the number stuff and simple, you know, one-read route, you know, just a small package of plays that he is able to execute. I really think that we've probably pinned the needle too far on the N'Keal Harry sucks idea when all we saw all summer long prior to him getting injured was a guy who performed well. He had one bad day at camp, and the next day he came back and played unbelievably well. He's going to be a good player.
Now, these next four games with the Patriots, obviously, we know the importance of them. And we know the importance of, the, you know, just the AFC. You talk about where they could fall. It's about home field advantage from here moving forward. When you start to look at some of these games here, what's your biggest concern with this Patriots team moving forward in any one of these four games?
Scoring, keeping up offensively if somebody starts to go off on your defense a little bit. And each one of these teams, look, the Patriots are still on pace to put together the most statistically stingy defense in NFL history. So just because what we saw last week puts a qualifier to that, a yabut to it, and puts a concern around their run defense, I don't think that this is necessarily a bad run defense. I think it got exploited. I think it got beaten up scheme-wise, but I don't think that they're bad tacklers, and I don't think that they're dumb players. So I think that that was more about them than it necessarily was about Baltimore, and that's not to say Baltimore is not good, averaging 210 a game on the ground. But when we look at Dallas, Kansas City, Philadelphia, and Houston, all of them can run the ball. All of them have RPO capability with their quarterbacks. So these are all games that play into that. And if these teams are going to put up 24 points a game, did the Patriots figure something out against Baltimore offensively that's going to make them that much more potent? Because they had not been potent prior to that. That's why I think this Mohamed Sanu signing is just a tremendous move and the best one they could have made.
We're talking with Tom E. Kern from NBC Sports Boston, and it is amazing what a difference a week can make, because the Patriots were 8-0. There was a little bit of rumblings about 19-0. There was a lot of rumblings about this is the best defense maybe of all time. Well, now suddenly, and as you point out in one of your most recent articles over at NBCSportsBoston.com, the number one seed is not even a guarantee for the Pats. They're 8-1. Ravens are 6-2, own the tiebreaker. The Chiefs are getting Patrick Mahomes back, and they have a head-to-head game coming up in Week 14. Is home field advantage throughout something that you think the Patriots need to get to the Super Bowl, or is it one of those things where it's just, of course, more helpful?
More helpful. We've seen how many times them go to either Pittsburgh or last year Kansas City to be on the road and succeed. We've seen games where it hurt them. 2015, certainly being on the road for the AFC Championship in Denver was a bad deal. Same thing with 2013. But being at home is very, very helpful to them. But I don't think that they would necessarily be screwed if they weren't. But that's why these games are so fascinating for the next month. Look, honestly, over the first 2 months of the season, it's been fun, but it hasn't been dramatic,
yeah.
I think,
yeah.
Around the AFC. These next 4 weeks, because Houston is going to play Houston is going to play again the Ravens. Kansas City is playing both the Patriots and the Ravens. Mm-hmm. So all these teams are kind of intermixed. Indianapolis is in the mix playing Houston, I believe, as well in the next couple of weeks. So
yeah, Houston's got
all this stuff sorts out.
Houston's got the Ravens next week at Baltimore.
Yep.
So when you look at that, when you look at this, and then we kind of broke that down, when you look at the four teams that we look at and go, okay, the Texans, the Ravens, the Chiefs, and the Patriots, I would say that the Patriots, we know what they're next for, and Kansas City, They have probably the toughest four games in over the next month, because when you look at Kansas City's schedule, they're at Tennessee, then they play the Chargers, then they got the Raiders, and then they have the Patriots.
Yeah, and we're not even talking about the Colts, the Raiders, and of course the Bills.
Right.
You love the Bills this year. Been a big Bills guy, card carrying Bills guy.
Second in the power rankings for a couple of weeks there.
They were. You couldn't help it. They only lost once. But I think if you look at the AFC, Oakland's a pretty good team right now.
Yeah.
And they have been a good team. The road that they have traveled to the record that they have is unlike anybody else's. I mean, they were in London, they were at Chicago, they were at Green Bay and lost a close one there. They've had a really, really difficult schedule that people haven't paid attention to. So their 5-4 record to me is even more impressive than the numbers indicate.
Tougher matchup for the Patriots defense. Is it Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, or is it another go at Lamar Jackson and Mark Ingram?
Do you mean in the AFC or over the court? Because I'm looking at this Philadelphia game can be a real pain in the ass. But
yeah,
yes,
I'm saying more AFC because I know they'll play Kansas City in the regular season, and there's a good chance they're going to play one, if not both of them, in the playoffs. And I'm just saying which one would present a tougher challenge.
Kansas City.
Okay.
Yeah, to me, because there were plays that occurred last week. You know, the 53-yard run by Mark Ingram. It just shouldn't happen. You know, that's not the byproduct of the Patriots being a bad defense. That's somebody not getting to a spot or being overpowered on that particular play, and then a number of other things happening as well. There were throws that Jackson made that, God bless me, made them, but the 3rd-and-5 completion to Mark Andrews was not a high percentage throw. They made it. It was like the Eagles. It reminded me of the Eagles Super Bowl in that every play they needed to make, regardless of degree of difficulty, they were making. And I just don't see that happening again. There were balls, you know, hanging in the air that nobody came up with. There were 3rd-and-4 and 3rd-and-5 penalties. There was a 4th-and-goal, obviously, penalty that turned into a touchdown. So Kansas City is just too talented at too many spots to be comparable, in my estimation, to Baltimore, which doesn't have – look, he's an MVP candidate because of the uniqueness of what he's doing.
Yeah.
But he's not one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL.
Right.
Jackson.
No, he's not. I have him somewhere in the middle of the pack. He's a hard guy to sort of rank against everybody else. But as far as, like, just can you win with him, I'd probably
have
him in the middle.
Second time that you face him, it's a little bit easier to defend him because you got to – the game plan, you know, you kind of know – Baltimore – you know what they do, and they're not going to change who they are because they don't have that capability. With Kansas City, they can, you know, they can change some of the things that they do because of the quarterback and the playmakers. Now, when you look at this Patriots offense, you talk about a team that potentially could have to change. Do we see this team maybe morphing back into what we saw of the Patriots of old? Very similar to the success that they had in Baltimore. And granted, there was 3 series where they went no huddle, spread them out, throw the football. Is that something that maybe we see the Patriots start to dust off moving forward because, you know, that's who they might become now?
Yeah, that's the most efficient they've looked to me all year. And that includes the fumble with Edelman. But that period of time when they said, screw it, let's just go up-tempo and run these guys into the ground, that is what made their running game successful to me, is they wore down. They didn't allow Baltimore to stop. They kept the same guys on the field, and that's why Rex Burkhead and James White are better on the field right now than Sony Michel at running back, because they can do multiple things, and you can leave them on the field and make the defense have kind of matchup problems. We can do either thing. So as a result, they're probably going to stick with that. They're not going to magically become a better running team to the point of saying they're going to go from really not very good at all to good. It's going to stick right around there at average to possible at best. So stick with the, you know, 11 personnel, spread, up-tempo, and try and get after it that way.
Tom, do you think the 49ers stay undefeated, or do you think Seattle beats them tomorrow night?
Seattle's going to crush them.
Okay. Wow. All right.
Wow.
There you have it. Very good. Very well done. Now,
big game for Josh Gordon.
I hope so.
3 catches in.
I know you don't mean
22
that,
yards.
I know you don't mean
I
that.
I do.
You do? You really?
No.
Okay.
I don't know if he'll have a big game, but no. I like Josh Gordon.
I do too. He's Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston. Enjoy your off day here on a Sunday. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Take care. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much. You can check out Tom, of course, NBCSportsBoston.com and on Twitter at Tom E.
You know how we just talked about four-game stretches? Think about San Francisco's four-game stretch.
Oh, they're going to start to get it now.
Seahawks, they're Cardinals, but then Green Bay, Ravens, and the Saints.
Yeah, so four out of those five are going to be real tough for sure.
And the Ravens and Saints are both on the road.
Okay. We will go around the NFL coming up at the top of next hour. Plus, we have our picks. About an hour from now, we have our picks. We'll find out how we did last week, see what we're doing, see if we're still making some money on this. Plus, your phone call, 617-779-7937. This is NFL Sunday, presented by Kaplansky Insurance.
More of NFL Sunday right now with Christian Fourier, Jermaine Wiggins, and Rich Keefe on Sports Radio WEEI.
Back here on NFL Sunday, we'll go around the NFL coming up in just a few minutes. Look at the Week 10 games. The 1 o'clock games are not good. But later on, there's some really good ones. Field Yates has a rundown of the players who are officially in or out of today's lineups. Matthew Stafford, that was the breaking news at 9 o'clock this morning, Winky. Matthew Stafford is out. Patrick Mahomes is in.
I can't believe he's playing.
Me neither.
I think that's stupid.
Seems so stupid.
Right.
Especially they got the win. I could see if they lost last week and maybe panicked a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But no, they won. They're keeping pace right there. I would have gone another game with Matt Moore. Le'Veon Bell is in. LeSean McCoy out. Lamar Jackson and Hollywood Brown both in for the Ravens. Chris Herndon, who hasn't played all season, right? He was supposed to be back like 5 weeks ago, but he apparently is in. Corey Davis out. Demaryius Thomas in. And Antonio Callaway is out. So those are some of the big inactives and actives around the league today. It was interesting talking to Tom E. Curran, though, about some of the Patriots-related issues. And he seemed to be kind of putting it on Robert Kraft for having this Ian Rapoport story come out there where Kraft is saying, like, oh, yeah, like we, you know, I told Gronk we'd love to have him back. Because you have a guy who has gone through so many injuries. And even, like, mentally, didn't Gronk by the end of last year or even 2 years ago seem done with football? He seemed kind of fried.
Yeah, whenever they won the Super Bowl and after the game. And
even when they lost the Super Bowl to the Eagles, I feel like.
Was that when initially came out?
Yes.
Him in his post-conference?
Yeah.
Yeah, then that was.
And then
when
he played another whole season and individually wasn't as good, but was a part of a Super Bowl winning team, had a couple of really big catches throughout the playoffs. But it just seemed like he was kind of
done. That's when it was strange because he had a great year that year and the loss against the Eagles Super Bowl. And then afterwards it was.
They're like, are you considering retirement? And he's like, how'd you hear about that?
Right.
And so like, oh,
that's
boy.
When this whole thing started. So, yeah, that's when it was kind of strange because you look at the season that he had. He was healthy. He played great. And you're like, well, you know what?
And then you have Robert Kraft saying, hey, I know you just made a very huge decision for your career, but we'd love to have you back in November.
Yeah, but that's like, you know, if he's cleaning out his locker at the end of the season after the Super Bowl, he's there, you know, February or March, and he's just grabbing his stuff and, you know, and this is it. And he go, hey, listen, you know, we'd love to have you back. And hey, don't worry about it. Come back at the end of the year in the playoffs. It's kind of like a one-off just.
Yeah.
I don't really look at that like is Robert Kraft stirring the pot.
A little bit, though, because how do you think Rappaport got that? If it's a one-on-one between Gronk and Robert Kraft, you think Gronk ran and told A. Rapoport that? I don't think so.
So, but do you think Kraft ran and goes, oh, I said to Gronk that the door's still always open?
Yeah, maybe.
Well, maybe he does tell him that.
Yeah, but maybe
isn't that what he said when he was on NFL Network with Willie McGinnis and said, yeah, he hasn't put his papers in yet. I would have... You know, where was Curran's...
No, Kraft said that.
Yeah, but where was Curran's anger when Kraft said that? Why wouldn't
that... Oh, he might have. I don't remember. I don't know.
That would stir the pot more than...
Yeah, that was a pot-stirring situation.
More than this from something he said last...
But it is kind of typical because I think nationally, and we talk about it every Sunday, but nationally, either Schefter or Rappaport, maybe Glazer, but I feel like the other two guys are more about stuff that seems kind of late, and they're like, hey, save it for Sunday... Even though they've been talking about a certain thing in Boston for weeks. And then this is going to be trying to make it like national news on a Sunday. So that was the earliest thing today. There was the Gronk news that Robert Kraft is hoping for a return. And if you're waiting for a return, he basically has to be on the roster by November 30th. So you got 20 days.
Yeah, so 3 weeks, almost 3 weeks.
Yeah, so what do they got, two more games? Like, that would be the day before, was it the Texans game off the top of my head? Or whatever it is. So they have next week's game, then the week after that.
Next week, then Cowboys, Eagles, Cowboys, then Texans.
All right, so it would be like a day before the Texans game. Mm-hmm. So he basically has 20 days from now to determine whether or not he wants to be back. So I don't think he's coming back. I know you've changed your mind. You thought he was, and now
I'm starting to lean towards he's probably not coming back.
Yeah, he's done. All right, we got one final hour of NFL Sunday.
But I am
here.
Leaving the door open.
Just a little bit. Just slightly.
That's an Adam Schefter right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, right. He's not coming back, but he could.
Right.
Yeah, barring a change, he could. Right. It's like, well, what? Of course.
But he probably could stay retired.
He could.
But he could come back.
He could. He might. All right, thanks, Adam.
You could go back and forth. This could be ping pong all day long.
The whole thing. We'll go around the NFL here coming up. Some big games, especially as you get later in the day, and the Monday night game is fantastic. So we'll get to that, plus our picks later on next hour. This is NFL Sunday, presented by Kaplansky Insurance. The right coverage at the right price. Kaplansky.com, also in part by the New England Kubota Tractor Dealers and Needham Bank.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.